moon, you bird brain.
What do you do, backflips? You jump up there in a silly suit, what do you do?
I go, bam! Right. I want you to play that.
All right. Good evening, everybody. Fast Freddy here from the Youngstown studio in beautiful downtown Youngstown, Ohio. And actually, it's a really nice night out. The weather, man. Unfortunately, it's going downhill from here, but.
Well, because I came into town.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's always like, you know, Basil's here. And then Mother Nature goes, well, let's fuck it up now. What can we do? Oh, I know. Thunder, lightning, hail, storms, everything. So it's actually nice to be here, man. What's going on, bro?
It's really good to see you, man. Our buddy Basil is here. Basil the comedian. In case if you're wondering, if you're looking for him online, it's Basil the comedian.
It's Basil the comedian on Facebook. Then if you go to my fan, because everyone wants to go and be a friend, and you can only get like 5,000, right?
Yeah.
So I created a fans page, and I tell them go to Basil Fans, BASILEFANS. Follow me, do the thing there, man. That's all it's to.
Okay, you know? That's good.
But so, Fred, it's good to see you.
Oh, it's always good to see you, Bays. We're already a couple beers into this already. That's why it's, you know, that's why we got a late start here so far.
Yeah, because, well, it's okay.
You know, we had to get a couple of beers in us here and get things rolling. Absolutely. So you are going to be at the Funny Farm on Saturday. Two big shows coming up.
Two big shows, and the way they're going, we might be doing a Midnight Madness show. So we're just about sold out for the two shows. And thank you, Youngstown. Always, you guys always make me feel welcome. This is like a, you know, I got my comedy start in Cleveland. So it's actually, and then I started doing comedy and I came here to Youngstown, dude. And that's where I met you.
Right.
And when you were with your previous station, previous station that you were with Dom.
Right.
And Chrissy was the PD at that time. Sure. And we had some phenomenal times there. And no, man, you actually, you made it on the album, my first album, you know, big thanks to you. And, you know, it was called Basil Unleashed.
Still a great album.
Oh, thanks, bro.
The one about your mom with the church dues.
Oh, God.
Because the union, that whole thing about.
Well, my grandmother saw, this is no bullshit, man. My grandmother, saw this bumper sticker and she read it. It says, my Lord is a Jewish carpenter. And that's all she read, my Lord. And she comes up and goes, he's union. And it made so much sense because we've been paying a dues at church for how long? You know, it made complete sense, you know, because I was thinking, what if Jesus was a contractor?
Right.
Jesus, how big you want to make the doorway? I don't know, go from here to there. Oh, that's a bad measurement. Okay, go back. Okay. So to me, it was always a lot of fun to do that stuff. And yeah, man, a good
and of
fun.
Course, the cover of that album is really cool, too. It's you playing poker with classics. The dogs. Yeah.
Cassius Marcellus Coolidge. That's a name that you'll never forget. And so, you know, when that painting was done?
No.
Just take a shot.
Okay, the dogs playing poker, the famous.
Yeah, the series, right. The entire series. Just take a shot.
Now, it's probably older than I think because you're asking me.
Yeah.
So, my first guess would be like 1930s.
1917. So, which tells me they were doing some serious drugs even back then. Because for this guy, he's doing mushrooms. He's doing, he goes, okay, I just got this idea. There's going to be dogs playing poker and playing pool. And we're just going to draw these pictures. It's going to be phenomenal.
He might have actually been the first man to put a bulldog in a derby hat.
I think he very well may. But to me.
First bulldog smoking a cigar.
You know, it makes sense. It really does. But, you know, to be honest with you, man, when I came up with the idea of Basil Unleashed.
Right.
And I had a couple of friends of mine. I said, what do you think about this? And then the people who wind up Diversity Records out of Cincinnati, Ohio, Jim Svarnas, he goes, well, how do you want to do this? So, Jim, here's my vision. I don't know if you could do it. And we actually, I'll never forget, I was wearing this gold lamé shirt. And I had to buy this big spiked you know, collar that for dogs.
You were almost like Seinfeld with the puffy shirt before that even came around.
There is no two ways about it, Fred. I was Jerry Seinfeld with the puffy shirt. I was wearing the pirate shirt. No two ways about it. I listen, man. Like I told you, man. You know, that's why I can't even get laid in prison because of my wardrobe selection.
You could. Don't worry. I'm sure you could.
I'm wearing paisley now. I'm wearing paisley. Where am I going with this? Okay. So, nah, man, it's actually pretty cool to actually do some of the crazy stuff that we did.
I'm still trying to think of some of the other stuff on there. Beer, hunting for beer.
Oh, God.
Hunting for beer.
People would scream out, but you know, you get, so what do you guys hunt for? And I'll never forget a guy go, you know, deer, but I swear to God, I thought he said beer. Beer. Yeah, that makes sense. You know, it's like, right. We're going down aisle 6. I heard a 6-pack. Don't shoot. There might be a keg behind him. You know, just think about it. I haven't even remember this material. It's been so freaking long.
Right.
But you know, it was a fun time when there wasn't all this crazy woke stuff that was kind of going on. And how do you feel about woke being named after you?
Yeah, isn't that crazy? You hear it on the news all the time. I've been woke all my life, but it's okay.
And there is nothing politically correct about you.
No, none whatsoever. None whatsoever. But I was thinking about that the other day, about how the city of Youngstown has embraced you. For some crazy reason, since you've been here, I mean, I know, especially with your Greek shows and stuff, you're big in a lot of places. But I mean, do you feel like Youngstown, for some reason, has just embraced you?
You know what the funny thing about Youngstown that always kind of made me laugh is, I always felt like I was one of their own. You know what I'm saying? I enjoyed being with you. People enjoyed being with me. I didn't hold my nose up in the air. I like being with people.
Right.
It's like there's a lot of guys who are comics who made it big, Drew and, you know, Steve Harvey and stuff. And I started with Steve, right? And as soon as they made it to the next level, they disassociated themselves with everyone. Where with me, I said, screw that. I enjoy being with, you know, the guys who and the women who made me who I am, and the fan base.
We would be at the Ice House at 6 o'clock in the morning, doing the Wheel of Spank and just hanging out and drinking beers and stuff at 6 o'clock in the morning, and the place would be packed.
And we'd sit there and we're going, okay, who wants to be spanked? And all the women are just, I do. I'm like, oh my God, I love these women.
And I remember one year it was my birthday and Chrissy and Casey had that cake, have the best birthday ever. And it was a pair of titties on the cake. And we had Blind Mike there. Remember Mike was there and Butcher. And we just had this like sideshow going that was just complete insanity.
But
and we were broadcasting this thing the whole time.
But that's what made it fun, dude. You were real. There was no pretentiousness. There was no nothing, right? We were all sitting there just having fun and goofing off. I remember pulling out my gloves. Women wanted to be spanked with the gloves.
The leather gloves
that I would actually wear. I'm sorry that I burp. I'm drinking beer on an
interview.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all right.
So I got a big hand and I smack you. I used to use this hand to smack people upside the helmet, right? When I would play ball. And, you know, these women would say, yeah, it doesn't mean a thing unless it has that sting. Well, honey, you came to the right place because I'm all about this thing. So we actually wound up having so much fun. And, you know, dude, when you, we were just talking about before we went on air, the two girls, we'd give away tickets. And trust me, we were selling out shows. And I was really like Joe Nobody back then, right? Yeah. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, okay, come on over here. And we had, you know, you girls want to get tickets, bring us breakfast in a bikini,
right?
And it was the middle of winter and these chicks would come out, and you know they came out because their nipples were like, you know, 5 feet ahead before they came in. Oh yeah, there's breakfast coming. Oh, there she is. Okay, all right. You know, they would come in there freezing their asses off bringing us breakfast. Because I'm all about, you want to come to the show? bring me breakfast in a bikini. And wouldn't they come?
Oh, yeah.
And then we had two girls doing the nasty to each other.
On the phone,
on
live.
The phone.
Right.
And you and I were like two little innocent children just sitting there like, this.
What is going on here?
That, to me, that was real radio when it was fun, man.
And then remember the guy that pulled out a shotgun and just started shooting up his car.
I want me some tickets. What are you willing to do? I'm going to shoot the windows out of my car. Well, let's see you do it.
Boom. Smash.
Folks, that was real radio.
Nowadays, I don't think you could get away with that.
No,
just
of course
for
not.
Encouraging somebody to pull out a gun or discharge it. And, you know, and now probably the way it's set up to even give away a pair of tickets, you have to have a legal thing and I got to go through the legal department and all this crazy stuff. Back then it was just like, okay, what are we going to do next? Have somebody shoot their windows out with a shotgun.
Dude,
okay.
Yeah, that sounds like a great yeah, idea.
Let's do it.
And we always thought we would get in trouble, right? And Dominic, God rest his soul, right?
Yeah.
The poor guy was just, he was my biggest fan.
Yes.
And he would not even think twice. Yeah, whatever, Basil, you want to do, that's fine
yeah,
by
exactly.
Me.
Yeah,
exactly.
Oh, you're God. Shooting out windows with a shotgun?
Yeah, that's go good. Ahead. Yeah, go okay. ahead. That's fine. Yeah, I got no problem.
Yeah, he was your biggest fan. I remember before you even played in Youngstown, and he'd always say, you got to see this guy's intro. Wait until you see this guy's intro. You never seen anything like this. And he's laughing just saying that, like, you know.
And you know what? That intro, and the people of Youngstown, like I said, have embraced me. But you got people who have seen my show dozens of times.
Oh, Bob and Peg. You know, yeah. Bob and
oh,
Peg,
my God,
you
yeah.
know.
And they're just like, you okay. And they'll watch. Now, listen, I have a great closing. I have a great opening.
Right.
But, you know, and I pride myself on sucking people in because I'm the master of the curveball.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, when I say sucking in.
I don't know where
you're
going.
I know what you're
that.
Thinking. Okay, again, boys in cell block C yeah. who are watching yeah. and listening to this right now, just calm down. Bring it down a notch, okay? So they would sit there and they would have so much fun with that. You know, and I would just, you know, die laughing with it. So yeah. to me, that was what, again, what radio was all about.
But I mean, everybody in this town embraced you. I mean, you had a good relationship with AC and Kelly.
Yeah.
You had a good relationship with Lynn and
yeah.
Mr. Sports on
Absolutely.
Y103. The TV shows that have you on every morning show.
Yeah.
You know, the papers would always write a nice thing about you and everything.
And, you know,
it's for some reason, you just became like, our adopted son or whatever.
And, you know, and that's great. And I could live with that. And I love that. You know, Cleveland, I miss Cleveland a lot. There's a lot of stuff about Cleveland that that kind of turns me off. And, you know, it's not so much the city. I love the people of Cleveland. It's the ownership of the various rooms and stuff like that, that you sit there. I don't play the politic bullshit.
Right.
I just won't do that.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to suck anyone's dick to make sure that I can go ahead and do this. Well, you got to do. No, you know what? I don't have to.
Like okay. your famous appearance on the Bob and Tom show.
Oh, God.
You've only Remember been on that? There once.
I did Bob and Tom. And so, no, I did it twice. Oh. The Bob and Tom.
Yeah.
And then the second time I went back and they liked me because I was doing the James Brown shit, right? So
yeah.
I was like, okay. So all of a sudden I've always noticed something about them. And I'll never forget. I came in and, I came in with a guitar and I brought the guitar and I brought it in. I laid the guitar on the counter and they go, Basil, how are you? I said, I'm great, Bob and Tom. How are you? Great. And that's wonderful. I said, hey, you brought a guitar in. You're going to sing anything for us? No, not so much. I realize that anyone who brings a guitar in the studio stays a lot longer. Okay, Basil, thanks so much for coming on the Bob and Tom show.
We'll see you again.
Never. So for me, yeah, did I maybe hurt myself doing some of the bullshit? Yeah, maybe. But you know what? I call like I see it.
I've got to be me. I did it my way.
But you know what? You do it. And like right now we're working. I'm working with two phenomenal people with two great production companies. One is called Equinox Films out of Canada that I'm working with very, very closely. These are the same people who distributed my Big Fat Greek Wedding, the first one.
Uh-huh.
And because you can have the greatest thing in the can. And if it's not distributed,
right,
you got the greatest thing in the can.
That's right. About it. And then I'm working with a gentleman by the name of Gary Grossman, who is a 10-time Emmy Award winner. So it's been, you know, a lot of fun doing that. So he's done over 10,000 productions.
Wow.
And he wanted to work with me.
Yeah.
And he goes, why aren't you further along and having your own TV show and doing movies? And I'm like, you know what? To be quite honest with you, I'd love to. Hold on. Let me take a good picture. Are you ready? Should I go spread eagle or no?
Got it anyway.
Got it. Okay.
I've always thought that you're just like one home run away. You're like one break away. One break away. And you keep swinging.
You know, you keep swinging. You know why? Because someone's going to finally say yes. And then when they do, and I know as soon as we wind up having that show, it's going to be unbelievable. You know, it was great getting like my first Emmy nod. I did the voice of Jimmy the Greek Schneider on the 30 for 30 special.
Oh, that's right.
And it was my first big Emmy nod. And doing that, and Jimmy the Greek, who knew?
Yeah.
Steubenville, Ohio, right? Big star. You know, came from the area, and I was telling your producer, I said, you know what the funny thing is that when I did it, I did a great Jimmy the Greek.
Let's hear your Jimmy the Greek.
Well, the Jimmy the Greek, it was almost like we were talking earlier, right? So we were sitting there kind of laughing, and Jimmy the Greek had an Eastern Ohio, Western PA kind of accent, okay, with a slight little Brooklynese involved, talked a little bit slower, and he would talk like this. Now, basically, you know, this is the way. So I did a perfect Jimmy the Greek on air that he used to be on NFL Today on CBS.
Uh-huh.
But the thing that killed me that was so funny, the FCC would actually sit there, Federal Communications Commission, they would sit there and go, you know, we're not allowed to give numbers anymore when you do the odds. So he goes, okay, I'll take care of that. And the guy who wound up overseeing it was the guy who's the CEO of the Football Hall of Fame, George Veris. That was the exec producer of the NFL Today. So he says, you couldn't give numbers. Okay, fine. So all of a sudden, Jimmy, what do you do? He says, well, I a little less than the field goal. Okay, yeah, I would say to maybe not so much a safety, but close to it. So you're taking a point and a half, right? 2.5 points. He's doing that. And I'm dying. I am dying when I'm watching this because I knew what the rules were. Even I was, you know, I was young.
Yeah.
But I knew what the rules were. But he was bypassing the rules by not laying down numbers, but he was doing it that way. So when I wound up doing this, he recommended me to do this voice to narrate as Jimmy the Greek to the 30 for 30 special. So I wound up doing it, and I'm like laughing my ass off because they're saying, oh, Basil, your sides were great. We love what we heard. But can you do Jimmy the Greek from the dead? And I'm with my manager, and it was a phone conference, and I want the gig, and we're looking at each other like, what the fuck? Yeah, of course we can do it.
Sure.
Are you kidding me? If I specialize from the dead, okay?
Right.
Well, what they really wanted was someone that was really more he was remorseful, and that's what they were looking for.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, doing all that stuff, it was a lot of fun. So I laid down the track. They loved it. And we got nominated. That was my big first Emmy nod.
That's cool.
And then I got a lot of stuff. And then, you know, because I do the voice of Bullwinkle for Universal, I do all that other stuff. So it kind of lend itself where I really, really enjoy. And then the James Brown stuff. Because I was thinking about some of the other stations. I actually did it for Fred, too. I would call in periodically. And do the voice of James Brown.
And the best one was he would do this during the OJ trial.
Yeah.
And it would be the weekly, or we might even win daily for a while there. But we would do it on a regular basis.
You guys pitched me some money.
Right.
He says, hey, can you do this? Yeah, I'll call once in a while. Because that's where I got really involved with Bob and Tom, John Boy and Billy, Jeff and Flash out of Cleveland with MMS. And then they went to TAM. You know, with you, and it was a bunch of San Francisco, Malo and Mindy down in Miami. I was doing all these stations. We were just discussing this. And, you know, so James Brown would call up, you know, good God almighty, let me tell you white people what went down. Let me see, you know, and I would start doing this stuff.
And then you had a nickname for every character.
See, I told you, everyone had a moniker. It seemed that Big Bird, Marsha Clark, were talking to F. Lee Pearl Bailey, him, my hero Shapira, and also, you know, right?
So you go, and they were talking about a thing called DNA, also known as DNA. Now the DNA has a thing called a G track, G1, G2, G3, G4, G5. All the sushi man will eat or jump back when, ow, you sung my battleship. This is James Brown.
So we would do this stuff. So I was doing WPLJ in New York. All right. So I get a call from Ross Britton. Okay. He goes, hey, and this is a story that I didn't tell you because you want me to save it. Right. So I'm laughing. I'm like, okay. Hey, listen, Dick Clark is coming on the air tomorrow. I want you to call in as James. And I said, you want me to call in as James Brown? And he goes, well, yeah, what the fuck else you think? James who? James Earl James Earl Jones?
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. So I said, sure. So that's all they left me with. So I call up, and I have, of course, I had the hotline number, and I call up the hotline number, and Dick Clark was there. And also I go, oh, it's Dick Clark there. Dick Clark. All of a sudden he goes, James, he goes, is that you? Yeah, man. And all of a sudden he goes, hey, guys, can we go to break real quick so I can talk to James? I about shut my pants. I'm like, what the fuck do I do now? So I'm like, yeah, okay. Yeah, we'll go right to break. Hey, we'll be back after these messages. James, how the hell are you doing? I don't know what to do. So I'm like, yeah, Mr. Clark, my name is Basil. That is the best fucking James Brown I've ever heard. Holy shit. You know, and then one thing led to another. And he goes, hey, kid, can you do me a favor? I said, sure. He goes, can you call me next week, or can I call you? If you know, I said, yeah. I said, I want to talk to you. And of course, he had the Dick Clark agency as well.
Yeah.
So I said, sure. Here's my phone number. And at that time, I didn't have the studio like I have now. I didn't have all that other shit. And I had my home phone number. So fast forward about 2 weeks later, I'm in Wilmington, Delaware. I am drunk as a skunk from the night before. I get in around 6 o'clock with my cousin. We are just smashed, right? So about, I go to sleep a couple of hours. It's 8 a.m. I call up my wife. Zach Arula was young. And all of a sudden, I call her up. Hey, baby, what's going on? Listen, he called too early. Jesus Christ, what the hell? You and Manny drunk, and all of a sudden, he goes, hey, Kula, we're cooking eggs. We're just partying. Yeah. We're just, you know, we're drunk. We're on the high from the drunk, right? We're sitting there having a good time. He goes, all right, cool, man. And Kula says, listen, I'll talk to y'all later. Sure, not a problem. Okay. It's now about 11 o'clock. I call her back, and we're still stoned out of our gourd, and we're laughing our asses off. He goes, are you guys still? Yeah. And my other cousin, Jackie, who was married to my cousin, Manny, and she's like, oh, cool. This is a bunch of bullshit with these guys. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
So next thing you know, I'm like, okay. And so I was goofing off and I said, hey, is Kula there? And she's like, Basil, I don't have time for this bullshit. Okay, listen, I got to put Sakadula down for a quick little nap. I'm going to take care of some stuff. I said, okay. I'll talk to you later. Hang up the phone. I swear to you, she tells me a minute later, hi, this is Dick Clark. I'm looking for Basil.
God damn it, Basil. Didn't I tell you I don't have time for this bullshit? That's the lamest damn thing I've ever heard in my life. Listen, I told you Zakadula's asleep. Now I have time for this bullshit. And I guess the guy's going, no, wait. And click, hangs up on Dick Clark. And I'm like,
I call up 1 o'clock in the afternoon now. This is all Eastern time. So all of a sudden I call her up. Hey, what's going on? You know what's going on. Jesus Christ. I thought you were good at your voice work. What kind of bullshit is this, Dick Clark, that you're doing? Dick Clark. And it just hit me. What do you mean? She goes, when you called up like Dick Clark. I said, honey, I didn't call up like Dick Clark. And yeah. I talked to her in Greek, and I said, I swear to God, I did not call. She goes, what do you mean? And I'm like, I did not call you as Dick Clark. And I'm thinking, oh my God, Kula, I gave Dick Clark our home number. Oh shit. So what happened? I fucking hung up on Dick Clark. What do you mean you hung up on Dick Clark? And she goes, I didn't know what the hell to do. I hung up on Dick Clark. Holy shit. I'm like,
What is all right? But let's not get excited. And back then, if you remember, they had the white boxes. Remember the white boxes? We didn't have caller ID like all the phones have now.
Right.
This was a white box, which was the caller ID box. So you connected through your phone, right? And I go, what is the number on that came in? And she's looking. She goes, it's a 213 number. Mother of God. You have fucked my career in a moment of 30 seconds. You have totally destroyed me. And she goes, I didn't know you and Manny were fucked up drinking and you kept calling. I was like, okay. So I said, what's the number? And I called and she told me the number. And I said, okay, I'm going to wait an hour. I waited an hour, took a shower. I didn't know what the hell to think or do. And I called her. And I called up the number. And as soon as I called from the 302 number, which was Wilmington, Delaware.
Yeah.
And I go, hi, my name is Basil, and I'm looking for Dick Clark. And as soon as I said, my name is Basil, the woman breaks out laughing her ass off. It was his wife, who was also his personal assistant, right? And she goes, oh, my God, that was the fuck. No one's ever hung up on my husband before. Holy shit. And I'm like, oh, God. I just saw everything just float away my entire career. I said, well, I guess I'm going back to law school. Yeah. All right. So I'm like, yeah. So he goes, hi. And I said, I am so sorry.
Yeah.
So we try to do this thing where it's about a white guy who wants to be just like James Brown with the bouffant and everything like that. And
man,
it never worked out.
That would have been hilarious.
Yeah. And so that's what he wanted to do. It just didn't work out. And I was hoping because I wouldn't have minded being represented by the Dick Clark Agency at that time. Right. So it was pretty cool. So everyone knew me for my voice talents and stuff like that and doing all that. And that was pretty cool to be able to screw around with that bullshit.
Now, last week we had a guy on. He was in that vocal group called the Duvalls out of Philly, with the Bristol Stomp back in the day. And he befriended Dick Clark, you know, because they were on that Philadelphia scene at the time in the early 60s. And, you know, he was on the Dick Clark Cavalcade of Stars when, they put 12 bands in a bus and go across the country. And he was talking about how he befriended Dick Clark and he learned so much about the music business from Dick Clark. Dick Clark just kind of took him under his wing, you know, out of all these guys. And, you know, I'd be out late at night and Dick would be talking to him about contracts and promotions. And it, like the guy got a PhD course in addition to just being a singer, you know, 17, 18 year old.
As an management agency, how to work the tours. Absolutely.
And then this guy put together this TV show, like an oldie show for kind of like PBS. And then he calls up his buddy, Dick Clark, and Dick got pissed at him because he wasn't in the show. And these guys had a feud going for like 10 years.
No shit.
And they didn't talk to each other for 10 years. And then they were doing some kind of Philadelphia reunion show with all these, you know, Chubby Checker and all the Philadelphia people.
Sure.
And that's when him and Dick finally begrudgingly made up like 10 years later. But the way he's telling that story, you know, it's like when he's 80-year-old guys, and, you know, it's like these old time show business people and the feud with Dick Clark, you know.
I didn't, you know, the thing was, that was so funny. I didn't have, there was no animosity between the two, you know, between us, none at all.
Yeah.
His, and then he even commented, I sent him a videotape of my show and he commented, goes, man, you are something else. And,
or did he say that's something else? All right. No, how did he say that?
No, he actually said he called me. Uh-huh. You know, I didn't have to call in. And that's when I learned I got to get my own separate. So I had got another separate number. But it was kind of funny when I was doing the James Brown stuff. I have like a 3-car garage. And my brother-in-law and sister-in-law were staying with us because their home wasn't quite finished yet. They were building a new home. And so they have this thing called a FROG, which is a furnished room over the garage. That's the acronym for it. Right. So
frog.
Yeah, frog.
I never heard of a frog before.
Yeah, it's referred to as a frog.
Wow.
Furnished room over garage.
Okay.
So again, it's a very large room.
Yeah.
Okay, because they had a bed set up there and everything. We let them stay at our place. So my brother-in-law
rather rotund, if you will, or in other words, he's a fat ass.
Okay.
So anyway, I sat there. So, okay. And so this is about 4 o'clock in the morning and I have to lay down my track for James Brown calling in because it was syndicated. I had to call WPLJ at 4:30.
Yeah.
So I used to take and I put a little bit of carpeting in this one little corner and it was right above me were the steps that went up to the frog. Right. So it was all done and everything, but I put this carpeting so I can have some
furnished room over garage.
Yeah. Thank you, Fred. You learn something new. It's good. It's in there for good. Anyway, we wind up going ahead and again, 4:30 in the morning, and this is what I do. I'm right below them. Good God Almighty, this is James Brown. It seemed a big bird, but all of a sudden I hear this. My brother-in-law's running down, and he opens up the garage door and goes, "What the fuck are you doing, man?" And to this day, we still laugh about that with him coming down there. Yeah, man, it was hysterical, simply hysterical. But yeah, to me, that was the fun stuff doing that. And even to this day, it makes me laugh with all that crap.
Yeah, the James Brown is the funniest. I keep telling you every time I see you, at some point you got to get James Brown doing a NASCAR report. Although NASCAR isn't as what it used to be, but I mean, when it was James Brown given the weekly NASCAR report would be hysterical.
And then they were going in circles. Circle, circle, circle. I was getting tired. Well, moving my head back and forth and shit like that. You know, so
today that was the funny part.
So many different nicknames. Most of the guys have nicknames anyways. Oh. You know, and
Bubba, what the hell kind of white name is that for a black man?
The funny thing was when you would do that, I remember when we would get together and you said, Basil, do James Brown traffic report.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Right. Yeah. Here. Yeah.
Oh, it don't look good. Bumba the bumba the bumba. And all of a sudden they got black guys. Why got me black guys? It was so dangerous. Let me tell you, it's dangerous as hell. Don't do it. Don't do it.
So, you know, it was hysterical. So we'd sit there and people are like, what the fuck? What are we driving? What the hell are we doing? But to me, that was the funny part that we had that opportunity to go and do something like that, you know.
You know what? Actually, the guys from the Duvalls last week, this Jerry Gross, he had a James Brown story too. They were like one of the first white groups to play at the Apollo. They were like 17 years old, this vocal group from Philly. Somehow they wind up on the stage at the Apollo. And, you know, Jackie Wilson took them under their wing. And so did James Brown.
Uh-huh.
And they do the show at the Apollo. And at the end, they do some, you know, James Brown dance steps or whatever. Sure. And the next thing you know, they get off stage. Who comes walking in the dressing room but the godfather of soul himself?
What the fuck were you thinking about? What the hell were going through your mind?
Exactly.
You know, I only do that shit. Now I'm telling you right now, your white boy is done.
Really? Is that what that basically is?
Well, but he was joking with them. They said they had a little bit of a hard time understanding him. You might find that hard to believe. The guy said, you know, James had a way of talking. You know, but then anyways, though, he takes them under their wing. Under his wing,
right,
takes them on tour. So where do they go? Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina,
the Chitlin Circuit.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely. At a time when it was colored only hotels, and the Klan is shooting at their bus and everything, and they got these four white kids from Philly on the bus, and it was. I guess it got pretty crazy at times there.
You know, to think about what they went through back at the time, but let me tell you, some of the Chitlin Circuit comedians may have been Red Fox, may have been Moms Mabley, maybe all those characters. I mean, I grew up listening to Red Fox.
Oh, I love Red Fox.
You know, Red Fox. So let me tell you a story. There was a woman, and married her. I married a damn woman, you know, and all of a sudden she come home, and she goes, come home with a diamond ring. I said, baby, tell that diamond ring. She goes, I won in a lottery. Really? He says, go draw me a bet. Okay. You know, and she come home the next day and she got a fur coat on. I said, baby, where'd you get the fur coat from? He goes, well, I got it in the lottery. Okay. I said, it's all right. That's not a problem. Next day, she come home with a Cadillac.
I said, baby, where'd you get the Cadillac? She goes, I got it from a lottery. She goes, baby, do me a favor. I said, what's that, honey? Go draw me a bath. I'll go ahead and draw her a bath. And I put about 2 inches of water in that damn thing. And all of a sudden, she got to the bath, and she goes, why you only put 2 inches of water in there? I said, well, I don't want you to get your lottery ticket wet.
Back in the day, you know, when comedians used to tell jokes, and you know, Red Fox was famous for the Confucius jokes too. He would go through the whole thing, you know.
Oh my God! But that's, you know, some of the stories, right? That you'd sit there and laugh. And I have a bunch of Red Fox stuff that was dirty as shit.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, Richard Pryor to me to this day, in my opinion, was a true storyteller that was funny. You know.
Yeah.
And but the thing is, you can't take that material. You have to be able to go ahead and actually work and massage your material to your character. Now, my character, as tall as I am, as big as I am, and I do look good. And I got it. Okay. But the thing is,
wait, you need glasses.
No, I look good. No, if I were in prison, I'd probably get raped at some other prisons. Not so much the Boys and Cell Block C here in Mansfield.
Yeah.
But when I would, you know, the funny part is, man, when I would do a show and I would write, I write characters that work for me and make the audience laugh.
Right.
You know,
that's a good idea. But, yeah, especially trying to make the audience laugh. Now, you know what? Listen, if you are listening at home and you're thinking about becoming a comedian,
listen carefully.
Want to make write material that is going to make people laugh, right?
Think about it. I'm just saying, give it a shot. But you know,
I've been doing it wrong all this time. Thing you showed up here.
Oh, thank God.
Right material that will make people laugh.
Thank God I'm here.
Shoo.
Thank damn. God I'm here. That's all I'm going to say. Thank God I'm here to you know, put you in the right direction.
Yeah, I'm glad you did.
But
hey, by the way, if you're just joining us, Basil will be at the Funny Farm Comedy Club in downtown Youngstown in the Federal. We got two shows coming up on Saturday,
330-755-759.
Oh, 759, ha ha. That's
right. 759-4242.
4-2.
Call right now. Dave is actually waiting for your phone call. Okay. Or you can also go to funnyfarmcomedyclub.com, get your tickets. Listen, we're just about jam-packed in there. Ohio State ain't playing. You ain't got nothing to do. I don't want to hear your bull because you guys have been begging me to come on back. We're doing two shows on Saturday night, this Saturday night, Federal Building. And like I said, it's not a huge room, but we're almost sold out.
Yeah.
So they want to maybe do like a Midnight Madness show. And I ain't touching it until we're like sold out completely.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you guys want to come in? There's a 7 o'clock, a 9:15. I'm with Bill Stone, who's going to be with us as well. So I'm very, very excited to be doing that. So call right now, 330-759-4242.
That's ha ha.
Nothing gets past you. That's, I'm just going to tell you, nothing gets past you.
You know, it's kind of funny though. How long has the Funny Farm been around? It has been, for a while there was like a rolling crap game. You never knew where it was going to be. You had to know the code. You had to know how to knock on the door. But the one thing that has remained through all these years.
The phone number.
Right.
The phone number.
759, ha ha.
I'm saying, I would die laughing with that. And all of a sudden, you're so right. It would go from one place to another. It's like almost like a speakeasy.
Yeah.
Dave sent me. Oh yeah, come on in this way. Shh, don't say a word. Don't say a word. Nothing. Please don't say anything. My God.
Oh my At God. One point, there it was in two different locations in the same night.
Who knew? You remember, I used to love when it was at the Holiday Inn, though.
That was the best.
That was the best room.
The Holiday Inn Metroplex back in the day was the shit. Yeah. I mean, when you went to the Metroplex, because you had probably the biggest meat market, disco, Choices Lounge.
No two ways.
You know, I mean, if you couldn't get laid at Choices Lounge, I don't know what to tell you.
You couldn't get laid.
And then they had the Funny Farm, of course.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if they wanted to do some bigger shows, they had some other rooms in there and you could do concerts and everything. And then for a while, they had the Blazin' Tunes Saloon piano bar.
Oh, the dueling pianos. Yeah,
the dueling pianos, which they kind of opened in honor of like me and Chrissy. They thought that that kind of like fit our vibe.
It was
great. We would go out there and we would drink so much Jaeger. It was ridiculous. But I'll tell you what, when the Metroplex was happening, I mean, that place was the center of activity.
When the Metroplex was around, I remember doing, I actually did a couple of shows in the big theater, you know, the thing.
Yeah. There.
It was just unfreaking believable.
Right.
And people would wait. And that's when we were doing the tickets and doing the thing and everything. And like, you know, tomorrow I got to do with Lennon, Jimmy
Lowboy.
Yeah. Okay. Jim Lowboy. I'm doing their show in the morning. Then I got to go to the NBC affiliate and do that show there. And then we got to do Louis B. Free. And then I got to do all these things and going back and AC and Kelly. And then I'm going to be doing you and later in the afternoon. But the thing that I loved about this, it was always, it was a friendship.
Right.
You know, it was a friendship that I come, it was like I'm seeing my brother. You know, it's like right now, you know, with you, it's like I'm seeing a brother that I haven't seen in a couple of years. And I missed, you know, and I miss that shit. You know, I really do. Any comments from the people there? What do they want? They want to
They're just saying hi. A lot of people saying hi.
And you know what, Fred, you know, to be honest with you, it's divorcee night on Saturday night. So if you're a young divorcee and, you know,
and maybe you need somebody to console you or maybe you need some advice or some sort of guidance.
Yes.
And
that's and I'm all thing. About the sexual advice.
And that's the one thing that Basil, a lot of comedians don't do that. Mm. But when you come to the Basil on the young divorcee night.
Yeah.
For the thing is,
I'm all about, you know, actually working with these, you know, these mothers
hands on, you know, close one on one hands on type.
I want to help them to the next level.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
I hear you.
So, yeah.
Not every comedian does that.
No, because they really don't give a damn.
Fred. Right.
I
they want your money and that's it.
That's it.
You know,
I'm willing, Fred, and it comes from the heart.
I can feel it.
And what I've done is I want to work with these people to show them the love that they need. That's all I'm saying.
It's beautiful. And it like is. I've said, you know, you don't get that from other comedians.
No.
It's a comedy show. And then you leave and you go home and then you're going back to your misery. You know, you get, you know, you take your mind off of the problems for a while, but then you still need somebody to talk to afterwards. And maybe a couple of drinks.
Sometimes, a couple of cocktails.
You know, right. To loosen you up. And
yeah. And then get yourself comfortable.
Exactly.
You know,
right.
You put on something a little bit more comfortable. That's going to be good for you. You know, and it's all about you
and making you feel comfortable. That's a main thing. And it's a comedy show, but there's also this therapeutic value that takes it even further. Afterwards.
And I'm a giver, Fred. I'm a giver. I've always been a giver.
Sure.
You know,
and it's the way I roll. So ladies, maybe you're going through a nasty divorce or whatever.
What a great way.
Yeah.
To get back to your, you know, on your ex and to have me actually work with you, you know, and put you in a better place.
That's beautiful, man. That's really awesome. That's so nice of you to go that extra step.
Yeah.
Well, do you think Steve Harvey's doing that?
No, hell no. Well, he's been doing it for a while.
That's where you got it from. There were some people out there doing it. When you hear some of these guys that talk about their divorce five or six times themselves too. And it's because my wife didn't understand me. She didn't understand this like therapeutic thing that I've been going on, these therapy sessions, the fact that it's almost like a ministry. If you look at it that way, it's almost a ministry that you're, you know,
do you remember the movie? It was about the Cleveland Indians, the, with Tom Berenger and,
Major League.
Yeah. Right. So he's trying to get back with his ex-wife. And she goes, oh, yeah? Well, you slept with this woman. He goes, I was defending your honor, for God's sakes. She said you had I had a better body than she did. You go, that's exactly what I was trying to tell her after I saw what I saw. And I'm like, oh, God. Oh, my goodness. No, actually, man, for me, it's always been one of those things where I love, on a serious note, I love entertaining. It's always been in my, I guess, in my DNA, if you will.
The Dana.
The Dana, if you will. Yes.
And don't forget, you know, I'm also the voice of Bullwinkle for Universal Studios.
The Bullwinkle having sex is still a classic.
Yeah, screw me, you crazy bitch. Yeah, you know you want me. Sit in my antlers and spin. Okay, so, yeah, you know, you do that.
You know, it, to me, that was always a lot of
fun. You know, and another one of my favorites, since we're talking about your ministry here and your outreach project and that sort of thing. The Ernest Angley. Well, you know, how about this? No, the last time you were on, remember you did this and he died the next day.
Well, I have an effect on people, Fred, negatively, positively.
Ernest Angley doing the eulogy
for John Holmes.
Yeah, Johnny Wood.
John was a big man. A big man who touched people in a way they ain't never been touched before. Oh, he led a long, hard life. And he stretched more than the imagination. In the words of Linda Lovelace of Deep Throat fame, and I quote, she said this about John.
It was it's a tearjerker. It really is.
But see, this is the kind of guy that you're dealing with. You know? you see that?
I can't believe I still remember that shit. It's so freaking long. My God.
That's what she said.
Yeah. Boom, boom. Thank you. Fred will be here all week. Yeah,
right, right.
No, to actually go ahead, man, and actually laugh about some of the things that I wrote that I didn't even know were politically incorrect, because there was no such thing right. as politically correct or impolitical, you know.
Yeah.
Not correct.
If it was a joke, it was a joke.
Yeah.
You know, back people in the day. Knew what a joke was.
Yeah.
You know.
And you got people say, I just don't come. Yeah. You get
very simple.
Yeah, don't go.
You know, that's how I always felt about the radio or TV or whatever. Okay, if there's something I see on TV, guess what?
Turn it off.
Watch it. If it's not my cup of tea, and I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, or some people on social media, they cannot just scroll past something. You know? Okay, I don't like that. That's not okay. I don't think that way. Okay, I agree with that. They just can't scroll past and go on to the next thing. They got to write something.
Fred, I wound up, I'll never forget, this is about, it's got to be from nearly 5 years ago. I actually, Trump actually gave his first actual speech, State of the Union address. And I wrote down two words, nice speech. I have conservative fans. I have liberal fans, and they went, it was World War III. Two words.
Yeah.
Now I wound up, I have a guy who's a very, very right-wing guy. And he's a friend of mine. I know him. I don't necessarily agree with everything that he says, but probably about 80% of the stuff that he says. And he was going back and forth with a cousin, right? With a cousin of mine. Who was like, I can't believe. And he said so. Now, Fred, I have thousands of fans.
Right.
And so I get hundreds of responses.
Right.
Okay. And by the way, I want you all to go ahead and for those of you who are listening right now, go to Basil Fans, BASILEFANS, like me or follow me. And then this way, and then let me know what you thought about this show, because it is an honor to be back with Fred. And I mean that with all sincerity. And congratulations on the Y103.
Oh, thanks, man. Dude. And except I really don't like to work anymore. That's my problem.
Well, you know, being off
of work for a year and a half and not doing anything, catching the most and biggest fish I ever did in my life, riding my motorcycle more miles than I ever have, day drinking in my underwear, watching porn at noon, you know, in between the game show network. And it was really a really nice gig, man.
Listen, man, you had me watching porn in the afternoon.
Okay? In your sweatpants with a buzz on, you know,
to me,
no, it was like, wow. You know, and some people are out there bitching, oh, people don't want to go to work these days. People don't want to go to work. They're all lazy. My whole philosophy was, don't knock it until you try it. When you're out there doing that, let me tell you something. You sit there and you wonder, who come up with this bullshit about work hard, go to work every day, and put in your time and earn your way?
You bastards just don't know right. what the hell you're missing.
Yes.
Just go on the unemployment, hit the pipe, and just move on.
That's right. And let me see how you feel after like about a year and a half or 2 years. And, you know, then you get a little edgy because you're first coming back and they're kind of asking you like, hey, you think you could maybe do this commercial here real quick? The fuck? What?
You know, I just finished watching my afternoon porn and bam, you want me to come back to
you
work?
You want me to do this?
All right, but I'm not taking my sweatpants off.
Well, what do you mean? What do you mean turn off the light when I leave this studio? What do you turn off the light?
Are you shitting? Hey, do you know how much
effort? When I leave? Lock the door when I leave. Is that are you guys going to be on my ass all day? Is this what it's all about? Get off my fucking ass.
They just don't understand, Fred. They don't understand.
Back off.
They don't understand. I'm telling you.
Yeah. When you're off that long, it's like, oh, who come up with this work concept? And it's overrated.
It is overrated.
And I tell you, it is overrated. And then they expect you to be there like every day.
Are you shitting me?
Yeah.
Every day?
Every day.
The fuck's wrong with these people, Fred?
They want you to show up and like be there at like a certain time and
what?
Stay for a while.
What's a while?
Well, probably until all your work is done.
Oh, that's bullshit.
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying.
What the hell happened to this country, Fred? Do you remember when we were all on the dole and we...
the good old days. I'd like to get back to the good old days.
When we didn't do dick. And it was just wonderful. Watched porn in the afternoon, drank.
With a buzz. Went fishing. Make a margarita every day at 2 o'clock.
Rode the motorcycle.
Yeah. You know, get up at like 10 o'clock and ride to bumfuck West Virginia and back. And
as a matter of fact, don't laugh. There is a city in West Virginia called bumfuck.
Oh, I believe it.
I told you the funniest thing I ever saw in West Virginia.
No.
Oh, dude, I was coming up. I went through Charleston, and then as I was coming up, I took 79 North, and I was going towards Pittsburgh. And as I was going towards Pittsburgh, right before the border of Pennsylvania, West Virginia, I stopped at a gasoline station, and I saw a bookmobile, and it was on blocks. And I'm like, shit, it's a fucking library now. And only half the books are colored in.
But they all have dicks drawn on all the pictures
of course.
And stuff.
Dude, that was always a lot of fun, to go through certain places. But on a serious note, dude, I mean, to be able to go ahead, how much time? My God, have we gone over our time already?
Well, it's up to you. I
got some time. So to me, it was always fun to be able to goof off with my fans I remember because even the fans in Pittsburgh were always great. I don't like their football team. You know how I feel.
Who does?
Yeah.
Do you think anybody out there really?
No. My brother-in-law likes the Pittsburgh Steelers. Like,
okay, one guy.
One guy.
One loser.
Yeah.
One loser likes the Pittsburgh Steelers.
And I have to say this. My wife at home is a Pittsburgh fan.
Okay. All right, two losers out there.
Yeah, okay. My two daughters are Pittsburgh fans, but they're Indians fans too. Okay.
So this is my favorite story about that. One day I'm in Niagara Falls and I see a guy and he's wearing like an Indian's hat. He's got like a Steelers jacket on. And then I think he's got like, an Ohio State jersey on or whatever. He has like, and I look at him, I go, "You're from Youngstown, aren't you?" And the guy goes, How'd you know? And I said, I don't know. I call that being a cross dresser. I mean, you look like, you got a Pittsburgh Penguins hat on and you got an Ohio State jersey and an Indians jacket. And you're like, come on, man. You know, what's wrong with this picture?
The whole family, we're all Indians fans, but we're split when it comes. So the funny thing is we have a Pittsburgh Steelers Christmas ornament and a Cleveland Browns ornament, right? And we put on, and depending where they're at near Christmas time is where we place.
Oh, right? Who gets on the top of the tree?
Who gets on the top of the tree and who's on the bottom?
Yeah.
Well, my cat has been dry humping my Browns ornament for some time because they just haven't been doing well. So last year I put my Browns ornament underneath the Angels dress.
You put it right between Santa's legs.
Oh my God. Bam. There you go, baby.
Look what Santa's got between his legs.
So I'm sure my
great
cat was
big brown ball right there.
Bam.
Huh? How do you like that? The guy that's bringing you the presents, look at the balls on that man. Jesus. You had to buy two of them to put on there.
I'll tell you what, it was a beautiful thing, man. Beautiful thing. It really was.
I hear you.
But oh, my gosh.
These last 2 years, though, with the Browns have been more fun than, you know, like over 20 years. We have not had this kind of feeling in over 20 years.
I remember when we were in the playoff game and I was at that game. With the Jets.
Oh, I was there.
Were you
there? I got kicked out of there. But go ahead, and then I'll get into
my story.
So
Cockcroft was actually kicking for us, I think, when he missed the field goal.
Yeah.
And I was at that end of the stadium, okay, where he missed it.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm going to kill that son of a bitch. And my cousin was like, let's go. Let's go. We should go.
And it was freezing cold that day. It was below zero.
And I'm looking at my cousin. I said, never, ever leave a playoff game.
Right.
Ever. And he's like, no, it's a done deal. Don't ever leave a play. So that's when Mark Gastineau wound up throwing our quarterback, Bernie, down and got that 15-yard personal foul, right? And got him. And I'm like, and all of a sudden we won the game. One of the greatest games I've ever seen. I still have the ticket stub from that. And I always write every game that I go to.
Yeah.
And I have maybe 30 ticket stubs. And I wrote down on the back,
greatest game ever.
Well, on that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
But on other ones, how we played, what we did, what, you know, whatever the case was, and people, and everyone thinks I'm a nut for doing it.
Oh, I think that's cool.
I do that. It's like a cigar. You smoke a cigar. I write a little thing about it and actually take the ring from the cigar and write what I thought about it. And people think, well, why do you do that? So, because I want to know. I want to remember this shit, you know?
Yeah.
So to me, it was
especially
always,
me. I'm not that bright to begin with. So I'm getting older. So it's probably, I probably should have started doing that a while ago.
No, there are some games that you'll never forget.
So anyways, okay, let me get with my story here.
Yeah.
I went to that game on a bus from one of the bars on South Avenue. I think it was called the Sunset, the Sundown, whatever. So we go on the bus and we go up there. And of course we are just partying our asses off. And of course it was like 20 below zero or whatever. It was below zero, whatever it was. So we come in and we're right in the dog pound, right under the goalpost, under the goalpost. We're in the dog pound. The Browns kicked off. The Jets huddle up on their first play in the end zone in front of us. People start going berserk. Everybody is just bombing them with dog bones snowballs and everything. You just saw like a wave of shit just hitting the field. So I get so caught up in this fan frenzy. I pull my arm back. I throw a snowball. And just as my arm comes forward, next thing you know, it's behind my back.
Oh, man.
And I am escorted out of the stadium immediately the first play. On the first play. So they take me through like the bowels of the stadium, and it's like through a dungeon.
Right.
They take me down this back.
This is the old municipal stadium, right?
They take me down this like old corridor with dripping pipes and everything, and you just hear water dripping, the urinals, the big trough urinals are dripping through the ceiling, and it's dark in there. It looks like a dungeon, and I'm begging this cop. I'm going, dude, I said, I just got caught up in the fan frenzy. please don't let me, please don't kick me out. I said, I won't do shit. I said, I just got wrapped up and I said, everybody was doing
it. Were you,
just,
were you working at 106 at that time?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
That was a couple years before. And okay. So, yeah, I was working at WNIO.
Okay.
And so the next thing you know, they open this like dungeon door, one of them big steel fire doors they have, and they just push me out in the parking lot and slam the door shut.
Oh, wow.
And at this point now, there's nobody outside the stadium because it was just far enough in where everybody is in there.
Right.
And I'm just standing out there and I'm looking up at that stadium going, son of a bitch, I got to get back in here.
Yeah.
And then the next thing you know, here comes this whole chain gang of people all handcuffed together. They were, must have been in fights and shit. And they had all of them. There was about 20 of them all handcuffed together. And there's two cops on horses escorting them over to the paddy wagon. And I'm like, oh, well, at least I'm not with those guys. So I go back and I sit on the bus and the bus driver's on there and he's listening to the game on the radio.
Right.
And so I go sit in the bus with him. Well, the bus driver's getting liquored up. This guy's pounding on the bus during the game, right? So I'm sitting there and I'm drinking with the bus driver. So when it gets down to the fourth quarter, the end of the fourth quarter, I could see that they had the gates open.
Right.
You know? And I said, I'm going back in. And so fortunately, you know, we went into the double overtime and I got a chance to see the win and everything. Dude. So now we're heading back. And the bus driver, you could see, I know he's a little tipsy. And you could see like he's hitting the brakes a little too
fast, hard.
The
yeah.
Bus is jerking and things like that. So they have Pete Franklin on the radio. 3WE. God, Pete wow. Franklin at the end of the game. Pete Franklin gets on there. The first thing he starts was, that was the most embarrassing display by fans I had ever seen in my life. There was morons throwing stuff on a field like a bunch of jackasses. They're giving the city of Cleveland a black eye. What kind of moron comes to a football game to act like a jerk? And everybody on the bus is just laughing and pointing
at you.
I'm like, I didn't do that. I was caught up in the frenzy. You guys were doing that shit too, you know? But I just pictured a whole that day just, and I can still remember being on the bus and we were parked right out there, right on the lake, and that wind was whipping across and it was like the frozen tundra. But boy, I got back in and got a chance to see the finish, and boy, what a game.
There was two stories that make me laugh. One was we were playing Indianapolis in Cleveland. And a lot of people don't know, they actually paint. They were spray painting the field because the grass would have been brown.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So they're spray painting the grass and everything. And it was late in the game and this Indianapolis punter was punting out of the end zone, probably about 2 yards shorter than he should have been because he had the out of bounds line right there behind him. And the refs were all looking. So why the fuck are the refs looking at us? And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, they turn around, blow the whistle to make the play live. The snap is done. Tens of thousands of Milk-Bone dog biscuits were pelted at this guy. Kicks it off, and he just covers up. I'm like, oh, yeah, now I get it, right? So then I went to another game, and I was with my girlfriend at the time, and we were leaving, and it was one of those games like, God bless it. Why can't we just score and be ahead enough so we can leave a little bit earlier to avoid the traffic? And you saw that Canadian menacing sky coming towards us, that black blue sky you know is going to dump. And all of a sudden, you're, shit, son of a bitch, you can't leave.
Yeah.
You know? So all of a sudden, man, all of a sudden, you see these half dollar size, you know, flakes coming down and just landing. It would make a noise when the flakes went, like, you know. So I'm like, come on, Keek, let's get the hell out of here. We got in my car and the game was over. So all of a sudden we start taking off and I took the car and I was going up 9th Street. And of course it's bumper to bumper.
Yeah.
So I had these two idiots behind me. And every time I go a little bit, they'd hit me from behind a little. just a tap. And I'm like, I'll let it go once. And also I went up, you know, like a few feet, tap. They tapped me again. I let it go twice. All of a sudden, Kiki, my girlfriend at the time, she's like, just be cool. It's fine. Now, I have been known to carry a baseball bat with a glove because I love sports.
Exactly.
So, all of a sudden, go up a little bit further, tap, third time. Put the car in park, get out, go to the back door, pull out the baseball bat, take the glove off. And I just went to these two guys. I've never seen two guys shit their pants when I pulled out a bat. And I had this huge Louisville Slugger 33, and I still have it to this day. And I went and I saw their car and I went kabam right to the front of their thing. And the guy's like, no. No, that was my tap.
Yeah.
Said, you guys want it? And I held the bat and I looked at him and said, you want to do that crap again?
Yeah.
Oh, these guys about shit their pants.
Right.
I never forgot that. And I was like, man, I do have a vicious side of me. I just have to stop because it's not me, Fred. I'm a person who loves, physical harm, evidently. That's what I do. I just love that type of thing. Anyway, brother, listen.
Another good one for me was the helmet game when against Kansas City. And it looked like we were going to win. And I think it was the season opener. And this was in a new stadium. And it looked like we were going to win. And
this
I think
it was throwing the bottles at the refs.
No, I was at that one too.
Who were you?
I was at that one. I was at the bottle gate. I was at the one when Zeus got hit in the eye with the flag and went after the.
Oh my God! I remember that.
I was at that one. But this one, this was the helmet game, and we had that. We were playing Kansas City, and we had this game won, and this was like I'm pretty sure it had to be maybe the season opener, and the weather was perfect. This was like a perfect fall Lake Erie day, blue skies, nice and warm, little breeze. And it looked like we were going to win. And it looked like the game was almost over. And that dude Rudd took off his helmet and threw it in the air to celebrate. Well, they throw a 15-yard penalty for taking your helmet off on the field. Wouldn't you know it? Kansas City gets the ball back and they march down the field
and score.
And 70,000 people walked out of that stadium and you could hear a pin drop. It was the most somber procession of people walking out of a sporting event. I've never seen 70,000 people not saying a single word. You could have heard a pin drop.
Yeah.
And everybody was just like, oh, it's like, okay, I'll write that on the back of my ticket. Like Basil, the helmet game, the silence at the end of that game was unbelievable.
The silence is deafening, right?
Yep.
So you're like, Jesus Christ. Yeah. Anyway, Fred, I got to run.
All right. That sounds good, Basil.
But listen, I want to tell you, first of all, I love you.
Love you too, man.
I am so happy for you. On a serious note, I know you love working for Y103.
You know,
you've been around. You are an icon. Seriously, you're an icon. In Northeastern Ohio,
Western Pennsylvania too.
Western Pennsylvania,
Parts of West Virginia.
Parts of I don't know if
I don't really want to talk about
not really.
Okay, yeah, we'll just keep it at Northeast Ohio. How's that?
You're an icon, dude, and I'm proud, knowing you. And we have a lot of history together. And for those of you listening, you know the history that we've got with each other. And it's been, it's a great honor, man, being with you. I want all of the fans who are listening right now, call 330-759-4242 or go to funnyfarmcomedyclub.com. Get your tickets. If you guys want a show, a third crazy show, then you gotta, you gotta sell out these two. And we're just about there. And, I love you. Thanks for having me. I got to have you on my show called Pinch of Basil.
Yeah, you had Boom Boom on and you don't have me on.
Yeah, I had
Here you go. You're talking about Northeast Ohio icons, but then you put Boom Boom on before me. So, I mean, when you think of Northeast Ohio, do you think of Boom Boom or do you think of me?
I love Boom Boom, and I'm trying to work a deal with him. All right, so shut
okay,
up.
Okay, all right. Oh, I see. Oh, I understand. Oh, okay, yeah. He's got connections in the movie business.
He's got a couple of contacts.
Okay, I see how this works. Yeah. Oh, so I'm kind of ass out. I'm second on the icon list. So did you call him an icon? What kind of
Listen,
did you tell Boom Boom?
I love the dude. I really do. I really do. He's a good interview, but I think you and I could have a lot of fun. As a matter of fact, I got Costa Cufos, who is Ohio State standout.
Yeah.
And also played in basketball and also played for California. He played for the Kings.
Uh-huh.
He played for the Kings, basketball for the Kings. So he's going to be with us, and I'm very excited about that. That'll and then I got Mike Ditka coming on
you
the show.
You got Ditka. Ditka from the Bears.
The Bears. So really? I got him coming on.
You're Ukrainian. I'm Ukrainian.
I didn't know you were Ukrainian. Are you?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Heck yeah, man.
Okay.
Yeah, he's actually he's from down in Carnegie, Pennsylvania.
Yes, that I actually did know. And he was a tight end back then. Yeah. Then tight end.
He's like kind of defined the tight end position back then.
He actually did.
Yeah.
He actually
and did. And you got to ask him because I think he played at Pitt with Trafficking. You've got to ask him about his days with Jim Trafficking.
Did he play at Pitt?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I didn't know about Trafficking. The only thing I remember about Trafficking, he had that big no bullshit sign behind him.
Right.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, my God. That was just, that was.
You know, when he was alive, that was comedy fodder for us. We didn't even have to think of stuff. I mean, it made it so easy that anything he would say would be turned into a bit immediately. A some parody song, shits. A bit. It was just like, it would just keep coming. It would be like, you would wake up in the morning and it would be just like automatic, and he would come on the show and he would be a raging lunatic. And
it was great.
We had so
you
much
gotta
fun.
You
got
to do one thing for me because I still think this is probably one of the funniest things you ever told me about. I was opening. They weren't selling tickets all that well for Elaine Boozler.
Yes. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. I know exactly.
This is one of my
going.
Favorite stories. And they said, Basil, do you want to be part of the show? I said, sure. And they had me and Elaine Boozler at what theater was it?
Dior.
It wasn't a Dior. It was the big one. It was
the Powers Auditorium.
Powers Auditorium.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So I'm doing the show there. Yep. So go ahead, take it away.
So, anyways, Basil would come on our show. And it would just be, complete just mayhem. There was no rhyme or reason to it. It wasn't like your stand-up comic comes in and does the thing. We just had this crazy, anything goes, no matter what would happen. It was just like, most people come in and they want to kind of give you a little idea of what the show is to get people to come out and that sort of thing.
I never touched material.
Right. And we just had this lunacy going on. Anything goes. And like we said, women making out on the air and guys shooting out windows with shotguns and all this kind of crazy stuff going on. So now he's down there with Elaine Boozler and it's like, packed house and, big night of comedy. And Basil comes out and he does his act. And Chris Patrick looks at me and sees Basil after the show. And she goes, "Oh, you're a real comedian." It's like, well, what did you think? She goes, "Oh no, you like get
you
up there and then tell jokes and stuff." I didn't know that's what you were.
So freaking
funny.
You
were just some screwball that came in here. I hadn't a clue what you really did. And she was so impressed because that's the first time she saw Basil.
She took me to my stand-up.
She was like, and that it wasn't a joke. She's a pretty funny person herself. One of the funniest people I know.
How's she doing, man? Is she okay?
Chrissy is retired and love and life, and
she gets to retire.
Yeah,
she doesn't have to go back to work.
No, what
kind of bullshit. Bitch. Is that?
Yeah,
screw her.
Let me tell you, I'm done with her.
Yeah,
she's dead to me.
Yeah,
I want nothing to do with Chris Patrick anymore.
Chrissy, if you're listening to the show, I love you, baby.
We should have brought her down.
Oh, how cool would that have been?
I should have called her. I didn't even think about it.
Oh my God, that would have added another dimension.
Could you imagine where the show would have went?
Holy shit.
Well, next time you come back,
I remember there was this poster of all the hot girls from Youngstown that you used to have, and it was this 106
bikini,
thing that you had.
Yeah.
And I remember I was
infatuated with this girl named Yvonne something.
Bundy.
Was it Yvonne Bundy?
Yes.
And dark hair, dark eyes, gorgeous body, just whatever. And I'm like, who is that? Yvonne Bundy. Okay. Yeah. I think I want her to have my babies. That's all I'm saying. Okay. Every time I go by there, that same poster would be up there. Who's that girl? Yvonne Bundy. Okay. Yeah. I remember her first name, Yvonne.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. Yeah.
Right.
So
right.
Yvonne, if you're listening and you're a new divorcee, I'm here to help.
Now, keep in mind, we're going back a little ways in time here. So
listen, she cannot have changed that much. I'm hoping. Anyway.
Fred, so when was that? 93, 03, 13, 23.
Doesn't matter. And for all those of you listening right now, hey, check us out. Seriously. Facebook, Instagram, you know, Twitter, go to Basil Fans. My handle's the same, BASILEFANS. Follow me, and then you can catch us every Wednesday at 8 p.m. for the Pinch of Basil show. And then you can also follow out where I'm at, because I got to do a Greek show, a Greek concert on Sunday. I'm going to be on Sunday. I got to fly to Connecticut and do a Greek concert on Sunday.
I'll tell you what, your Greek show is something else too. That's another one of my favorite stories since we're going down that thing. I remember one day you were playing somewhere and there was this one table sitting up front. There must've been 15 people. And the first two guys come up and I thought they were really funny. They were good, you know? And these people sitting in the front row, there was about 20 of them, and they're sitting there
with their arms crossed
with these scowls on their face. Like, and they're just like, we don't even want to be here. And I'm looking and I'm going, holy shit. I go, Basil's got to come out. And it's like, these people here in the front row, they don't look happy. And I said, those guys were pretty funny. They didn't even crack a
snicker.
Smile. Yeah. You know, they didn't do anything. And then the next thing you know, Basil comes out and these people go freaking berserk. They were like some of his Greek following and they loved him and they just went berserk. But the first two guys that come out, nothing. And I'm like, why would these people even come to a comedy show if you're not even going to chuckle? You know, I'm like, oh man, he's going to have to work his ass off up here. The minute he come out, yay, they're practically giving a standing ovation. I'm like, oh, okay.
Hey, listen, now man, I am king and camel. That's all I'm going to tell you. I am king and camel.
There you go, man.
So we're going to wind up doing we're going to do a big show. I'm bringing a Greek singer over with me in February. We're going to bring a singer named Christo Velandis, who's going to be coming here with me, and we're going to be doing a big show at a theater in the area. So we're going to be doing that, and I'm cutting a special Greek special in Tampa, Florida with him, and then I'm cutting an American special in New York.
That's so, like, I always get a kick when you play down in Tarpon Springs.
Oh, God.
The Greek cat. Now, you have to be huge in Tarpon Springs.
I've never paid for a meal yet, so I'm going to keep that going.
I like the little Greek section that they got down there, too. You know,
you go to Tarpon Springs, the whole place is all Greek.
Yeah, right.
As soon as I walk out, Vasily! 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 Because my name in Greek is Vasily. Yeah. Vasily! You know, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah, please. You got to be the king of Tarpon Springs.
Oh my God. I'm like, this is great. You know, this is great. But dude, I want to thank you so much for having
me. Okay, Baze. Always good to see you. I will see you Saturday night. And get those tickets now. Funny Farm Comedy Club, new location, the Federal in downtown Youngstown, 759-4242, 759-HA-HA. It's going to be a blast as always.
Dude, I love you. Thanks, man. God bless you, bro.
There you go, man. Knuckle bump right there. You see that fist bump, man.
Pow!
Boom!
Bam! Love you guys.
Should we spike something? I just smashed my phone down or what?
Yeah, I'm going to get a new one. I'm going to get a 13 anyway.
There you go. Just smash the phones.
Dude, I love you. I'll talk to you all later.
Awesome show.
Take care, Youngstown.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.